BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, this is Things Fell Apart. Strange tales from the culture wars. I'm John Ronson, a writer living in America, the land where culture wars begin. And by culture wars, I mean almost everything that people yell at each other about on social media.
We want to take masks off our children. That should be our choice.
You are a white, privileged male who has no experience.
I can't help what I am. I was born like this.
I'm not saying that people should not be allowed to go through that procedure. What I'm saying is it doesn't make them a woman. It happens to be an opinion.
These wars can upset us. It can consume our lives and tear families apart. I was curious to learn how things fell apart, and so I went back in history to find the origin stories, the pebbles thrown in the pond, creating the ripples. I had no idea what I would find, but I've uncovered some strange and unexpected tales of real consequence. This story is about a rare watershed moment of harmony in a brutal culture war.
I want to tell you, there's a lot of Christians here who love you and who wouldn't be afraid to put their arm around you and tell you that we love you and that we care.
But before I get to that, let me explain. For much of the 20th century, America's evangelicals kept themselves far away from politics. There were rare clashes, like the West Virginian textbook war from the last episode, but mostly their leaders, men like Rex Humbard, preached joyfulness.
That's all God's interested in. He just wants to save us and fill us and bless us and help us and us to go out and tell. That's it. Just tell somebody about the good news. God has a time and we're living in it.
But then, in the late 70s, came Francis Schaeffer, the art historian from episode 1, with his message that Christians should fulfill their moral obligation to fight for the dominance of their values. Schaeffer inspired a generation of evangelical culture warriors, men like Virginia preacher Jerry Falwell, who said of the 60s and 70s,
"We ushered in moral permissiveness. The live-in arrangement, the homosexual lifestyle. We ushered in a pornographic explosion."
Falwell's politicization by Francis Schaeffer happened to coincide with a great new breakthrough in communication technology, satellite TV.
Televised evangelism has become America's newest growth industry. There is High Adventure, an evangelical talk show, and from Lynchburg, Virginia, the Reverend Jerry Falwell's Old Time Gospel Hour. The expansion of the electric church has been phenomenal.
Suddenly, these new televangelists had access to vast audiences. They could be ferocious, like Jimmy Swaggart.
"We preachers are fed up to hear. Fed up. Christians are fed up with politicians with no spine and no courage and no guts."
Or they could be unexpectedly boring, like Jerry Falwell, here on the PTL TV network.
"Good morning. You've just been listening to something that I know bores you."
What they didn't have was pizzazz. They didn't try to win the souls of their audience by exploring television's potential to entertain. Until one televangelist did. Her name was Tammy Faye Baker, and this is the story of one day in Tammy's life, the day she met a man named Steve Peters.
"Hello, everyone, and come on in. It's just so nice to have you here with us. Right here on my right, I have a young man named Steve Peters, and I'd like to introduce you to Steve. We'll be right back after this break to talk to Steve."
Tammy and Steve are going to talk when we come back.
Tammy's encounter with Steve Peters, odd and awkward and very surprising, might be among the most remarkable moments in 80s television. It arguably even helped harmoniously end a brutal culture war. But before we get to it, I need to tell you about Tammy and how she arrived that moment.
She grew up very poor, and she grew up in a very religious household, Assemblies of God, you know, no makeup, no movies.
This is Tammy's son, Jay.
And she went away to Bible college, where she met my father, Jim Baker.
Within a year of them meeting, Jay's parents had eloped and become traveling pastors, crisscrossing the South, preaching in tents and roadside churches.
They were children's pastors. So she made puppets out of soap tops, and she would like sand them down to make them different characters. They went around doing children's shows.
Hello, I'm Ellie the Alligator.
And I'm Susie Muppet.
Unlike their foreboding peers like Jimmy Swaggart and Jerry Falwell, Jim and Tammy were fans of modern trends.
From coast to coast, it's time for the nation's biggest yard party, the Jim and Tammy Show.
And by 1974, they had launched their own television network, PTL, Praise the Lord, with its Jim and Tammy Show, inspired by the late-night talk show pioneer, Johnny Carson.
My dad wore, like, sweater vests, you know, and, like, khakis, and, you know, my mom wore fun jewelry, and then all these guys came in, it was just, like, black suits. For Jimmy Swaggart and Jerry Falwell, they were saying, if you're not with us, you're against us. Jerry Falwell wanted to rule the world, and my parents, I think, wanted to entertain the world, and it seemed like everybody wanted to be on the show.
Here's Jim Baker on the PTL Network in 1979.
Please welcome a man who loves the same Jesus Christ who's born again that you and I love. Please welcome the man who made chicken, Colonel Sanders, to PTL.
They were on all the time. My dad was doing 6 broadcasts a week himself. My mom would probably be doing 10 or 11 because she had a thing called Tammy's House Party. My dad was a workaholic, and sometimes I think it had a lot to do with he felt that he had to do something big for God and it had to be perfect.
And through TV pledge drives, Jim managed to do something very big, fundraise enough to build an entire Christian theme park, Heritage USA.
No matter where you're from or what you like to do, if you're looking for fun, ask somebody how to get to Heritage USA.
They ended up putting a water park in there. It was kind of like a Christian Walt Disney in that sense.
You had real camels?
Yeah, they had a passion play every night of the week. So yeah, there were camels there that were part of the play because they had a permanent theater set up that was like Jerusalem. And there was a roller skate rink there. I'm trying to think of everything else that was there.
Heritage USA?
All these evangelists became somewhat jealous of my parents' success.
The other televangelists were jealous, but also appalled by Jim and Tammy's embracing of popular culture. Jimmy Swaggart was convinced that rock and roll derived from Satan, and Jerry Falwell was so suspicious of mainstream entertainment that he would, decades later, accuse the Teletubbies of spreading the gay agenda because Tinky Winky's antenna was shaped like the gay pride symbol. But what these men didn't know was despite Jim and Tammy's wild success, things were bad in Tammy's life.
Panic attacks, depression. She really struggled with prescription medications. There was a lot of darkness and struggles.
Hi, Tammy Faye.
Hi, Jim Baker.
You're hoarse.
I know. I don't know what's wrong with me.
Are you going to be able to sing today?
I think so.
Oh. She gets a little nervous when I'm not here, see?
That's right. I do.
It's true, and that's why she gets hoarse. It's just the stress.
Yeah, psychological.
Stress. She needs me.
That's right.
See?
Tammy was growing anxious and isolated inside the many homes that she and Jim had purchased with the very generous bonuses they paid themselves. The workaholic Jim was rarely around, and when Jim's father came to visit, he would belittle Tammy, telling her that her makeup made her look like a French whore, and so she put on more makeup.
I think she always struggled with this feeling of not being enough, not being loved, never felt pretty, so she, you know, put up all the makeup on.
It seems pretty obvious that that was a defense mechanism against her anxiety.
It was kind of her armor. I was there when she hit her bottom. My mom was starting to overdose on her medication. She was starting to hallucinate. I remember she thought there was like a pink elephant in the closet.
Jay was 11 then, and having been brought up by parents who routinely cast out evil spirits, he knew what to do about his mother's hallucination.
I remember getting up and being like, I rebuke you in the name of Jesus.
Did it work once you called on God to...
Yes, she said, oh, yes, Jamie, that was so good. Thank you, honey.
The elephant's gone now.
Yeah. She was just kind of out of her mind. It was very traumatizing. I remember being very, very scared.
As Tammy's anxieties intensified, a different kind of crisis was emerging in America. A Brooklyn schoolteacher had died of a disease no one could identify. Then a San Francisco nurse. Then a cluster of five gay men in Los Angeles.
Scientists at the National Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta today released the results of a study which shows that the lifestyle of some male homosexuals has triggered an epidemic of a rare form of cancer.
This 1981 NBC News report is how much of America first learned of AIDS, although it wouldn't be called that for another year. By the end of 1981, 130 Americans had died. By 1985, it was over 12,000. But Tammy's fellow televangelists were doing all they could to make the world turn their backs. Here's Jerry Falwell on CBC News.
Reverend Falwell, you say AIDS is God's judgment on homosexual promiscuity.
I do believe that herpes and AIDS, generally caused by homosexual promiscuity, is a violation, both of them, of God's laws, laws of nature and decency, and as a result, we pay the price when we violate the laws of God.
In public, President Reagan remained completely silent about AIDS for 4 years. Historians tend to agree that his silence was to please the religious right, including televangelist Jerry Falwell and his powerful political action group, the Moral Majority. Tammy, meanwhile, feeling alienated from her televangelist peers, found herself identifying less with them than with the objects of their scorn. And so she decided to do something about it.
My mom decided that she wanted to do an interview with someone who had AIDS. And they looked around and they found Steve Peters.
It was November the 15th, 1985. The day Steve Peters appeared on the PTL Network's Tammy's House Party.
Right here on my right, I have a young man named Steve Peters, and I'd like to introduce you to Steve. Steve is a patient of AIDS, and he so generously allowed us to talk to him today. Hello, Steve.
Hi, Tammy.
We're so glad to see you.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
I mean, what a brave thing. Now you're going to go and show everybody in the Christian world that you're an openly gay pastor with AIDS?
And no one was surviving. Everyone was dying.
No one was surviving. Everyone was dying. I mean, it was horrific. And he was very gaunt. And he was only given, I think, 6 months to live.
Hi, I'm the Reverend Steve Peters.
And you're alive.
Yes, I am indeed alive. This is 2021, and I am very healthy and alive, yes.
So now we know what brought Tammy to this moment. What about Steve? His journey began much the same way. He was born into a Christian family in 1952. By his 30s, he was a pastor at the Metropolitan Community Church in Connecticut, a denomination for LGBT people, which, he says, felt like an island surrounded by televangelist sharks.
The worst were Jerry Falwell and Jimmy Swaggart was in there, too. They were all virulently anti-gay. People like Jerry Falwell would talk about how gay people were going to try to recruit your children. They will molest your children. They would talk about homosexuals as being pedophiles.
When did you first know that you were sick?
I remember brushing my teeth and looking in the mirror and noticing that my tongue was coated with this white, cracked coating. And it really alarmed me because I'd read not long before that about this new disease that was being seen among gay men. This was 82. And over the next year or so, I was housebound with hepatitis, cytomegalovirus, pneumonia, mononucleosis, herpes, shingles, and I became weaker and weaker. And I was diagnosed in April of 84 with full-blown AIDS. I was sleeping 22 hours a day, and I was very thin and couldn't eat and looked like I was about to die. So they got me into the hospital, and after I had a near-death experience, they were able to revive me. And that was 2 weeks before the Tammy Faye interview.
After the hospital revived Steve, they put him on a treatment that had some positive effect, and so they sent him home. And that's when Steve learned that Tammy's producers had been in touch, asking for an interview.
And I said, sure.
You weren't trepidatious.
No, I thought it would be a great opportunity to reach an audience that most of us LGBT people had never been able to reach. I did insist that it go out live because I didn't want them editing what I had to say. And they sent me 2 first-class plane tickets to fly to Charlotte, North Carolina. But as my friend Nancy and I were headed out the door to go to the airport, Tammy's producer called again and said, Tammy is sick, and so she's canceling today's show.
But that turned out to be a lie. Tammy wasn't sick.
I later learned that they were afraid that I would not be treated well at Heritage Village USA, that the camera crew might not work if I came into the studio.
Tammy was in a bind. How could she surmount her camera crew's fears? And then they hit on a solution, which Tammy announced to her viewers with another lie.
Steve was going to come to Charlotte, North Carolina to be on our program here, but he is presently taking chemotherapy, and I was afraid the trip would be too hard on him. And so we have a satellite hookup live from L.A.
Any guilt Tammy might have felt about telling this lie seems to have been swept away by the drama of the day. This was a big experiment for them.
It was the first time they'd ever done a live satellite hookup. So they were very excited about that.
People shouldn't think of it as being like CNN. Your face was on an old TV propped up on a chair in front of Tammy.
On a doily, yeah, right, with a bouquet of flowers on top of me.
Right. And both of your earpieces keep popping out.
I know, that was very awkward.
This is an emotional interview for me. I just met Steve, and it's like meeting him in person. Steve, have you ever had a sexual experience with a woman?
Well, no, I've necked with a woman. But no, I have not had a sexual experience with a woman.
Do you think maybe you just haven't given women a fair try?
No, my orientation is towards men.
It was a little frustrating because I had not been told that she wanted to talk to me about being gay. I had understood that it was to be all about having AIDS. And when she started in on maybe I just hadn't given women a fair chance, it kind of threw me, but I've often been asked by people who've seen it, you know, those were pretty stupid questions, weren't they? And I said, no, they were the right questions for her audience.
They were human questions.
Yes, I think they were from her heart, where other televangelists might talk to me from a rather arrogant, judgmental position.
Now, when you found out, Steve, that you had AIDS, what was your first thought? I mean, was it that you're going to beat it? We've not heard of anybody being cured yet.
Right. And I know that I will die someday, and very likely from AIDS. But right now, I have experienced the repression of the AIDS virus in my system, and I believe that God is healing me every day.
Have any of your close friends died with AIDS, Steve?
Yes, they have.
And you know that's got to do something to you when that happens.
It does.
I suppose the interview starts to feel really extraordinary when she's asking you if you feel that people are uncomfortable around you at parties and so on.
I know you must feel lonely sometimes because with people not being well informed on AIDS, everyone is so terribly frightened of it, you know. Have you found this to be true, that people want to stay away and they're afraid to come up to you in the same room or breathe the same air you breathe?
Yes, Tammy, that happens. I was asked not to use the bathroom in one person's home. I remember going to a party once where every time I finished my soft drink, the host took the glass into the open kitchen and steam cleaned it every single time. I've been served on paper plates a lot in the last year and a half. And yes, people are scared.
When she starts talking to me about AIDS and what it's like to have AIDS and whether people are afraid of me or not, it did feel very human, and I felt like we were really connecting.
How sad that we as Christians, who are to be the salt of the earth, we who are supposed to be able to love everyone, are afraid so badly of an AIDS patient that we will not go up and put our arm around them and tell them that we care.
Yes.
If there would have been any way, you know, I know you were sick, and that's the only reason we didn't have you come and sit in the studio next to us today, because you had your chemotherapy treatments. But I want to tell you, there's a lot of Christians here who love you and who wouldn't be afraid to put their arm around you and tell you that we love you and that we care.
Thank you, Tammy. God bless you for saying that.
God bless you, Steve, and thank you very much for a very eye-opening interview.
I remember after the interview was done, I immediately felt like, oh my God, I didn't do very well. I got flustered. If only I'd said this, you know. I mean, I remember thinking, well, you know, at least nobody will ever see it except for the people who, you know, watch her live. I wouldn't know anybody who had seen it. And so I thought at least it'll fade into history and nothing will come of it.
Tammy's son Jay says he remembers that day very well.
I guess I was probably 9 or 10 years old when that interview happened, and I knew she was doing something radical, and I remember being very impressed.
So you remember there being like a mood in the air with that interview, that this was different to a normal day at Tammy's house party?
Yeah. Well, because Tammy's house party was kind of like, oh, that's Tammy's little thing over there. Isn't it cute? She has her fun little show. And everything, all of a sudden, that cute atmosphere around it was very serious. I think the Assemblies of God was very angry at her, my parents' denomination, but she just didn't give a damn.
Steve got home, forgot about the interview. Some months passed, and then it was time for his church's annual conference, introduced by its founder, Troy Perry.
Troy Perry opened the conference by showing my interview with Tammy Faye. I put my face in my hands and I thought, oh no, he's going to embarrass me in front of all these people. People started giggling as soon as the interview began. You know, they were like, oh my God, that's Steve. We know Steve. And he's talking to Tammy Faye. Oh my God. And then as the interview went on, silence overtook the audience. People were hanging on every word. And at the end of the video, people stood up and cheered. I mean, there were 1,000 people in the audience, and they all jumped up and cheered and applauded. And I thought, wow, you know, that was better than I thought.
Steve heard from Tammy's people, too, about the impact the interview had had with her audience.
Apparently, somebody called the studio and told them that she had a son who had AIDS, and she was worried that he was going to go to hell. But after listening to this interview with me, she said she now understood that her son was going to go to heaven.
Steve and Tammy never spoke again, but Tammy did send him a gift.
To thank me for doing the interview, she sent me audio cassettes of her singing. in the following few months after the interview, I got very, very sick once again. I went blind and I wasted away to nothing. I was just a skeleton with skin. And everybody thought once again that I was dying. And she had sent me this album that was called Don't Give Up on the Brink of a Miracle with the song, Don't Give Up on the Brink of a Miracle. Don't give in, God is still on the throne. Don't give up on the brink of a miracle. Don't give up, remember you're not alone. And that inspired me so much, and I would sing along with her over and over again, and I did get a miracle. I recovered my eyesight and I gained weight again, and I got my miracle. I was blind and now I see. Amazing grace.
I'm not a religious person, but there's a part of me that just wonders whether maybe being a religious person might have helped.
Well, I don't know. I know a lot of people had greater faith than I did that they could survive, and they didn't survive. I think a lot of other people who had more to offer than I did didn't survive, so that kind of throws a kink in the works. My doctor told me that, you know, if there's a 1 in 1,000,000 chance that somebody's going to survive this, why not believe that you're that 1 in 1,000,000 and act accordingly? And so I set out to do everything I could to create the conditions for healing in my body. Vitamins, nutrition, laughter therapy, and singing therapy, and I just knew that if I held that note as long as Judy Garland did, that I would somehow survive this.
And are you 1 in 1,000,000? Are you one of the very earliest survivors?
Yes. Sadly, I am. There may very well be others who have survived full-blown AIDS since 1982, but I don't know of any myself, personally.
Wow.
So I am 1 in 1,000,000, I guess you could say. Yeah.
Two years after Tammy interviewed Steve, the PTL empire crumbled. Jim was imprisoned for financial fraud, and Tammy was left among the ruins. As she later wrote in her memoir, I Will Survive and You Will Too, quote, I was all alone. I felt abandoned by everyone, even sometimes by God. But then something wonderful happened. The gay community.
Jay has told me that that interview with me changed his family. And she began taking Jay to hospices and hospitals to visit people with AIDS and to gay pride parades. And I know that a lot of LGBT people just loved Tammy Baker because she became an icon in the gay community of this loving, eccentric person. I think a lot of people related to her because she was different. Her loving kindness, her compassion towards me, I think was extraordinarily helpful to a lot of LGBT people who didn't think that they could be Christian or that they could be loved by their Christian families.
With same-sex marriage now legal throughout the United States and the UK and in 27 other countries, it feels like that culture war has been decisively won, at least in those places. Should Tammy's interview with Steve be given any credit for that? I like what Emily Johnson, a historian of women in evangelism, told us when we were researching this story. Quote, through oral history, you can see what a huge silent impact it had. It's like how traditionally the Pentecostals didn't wear makeup, but Tammy faded and flashy clothes and all the forbidden things, and her audience slowly started to report that it was okay to have a little sparkle in their outfit. That's what happened with the Steve Peters interview too. It moved them towards a more accepting viewpoint.
People in that audience got to see a real live human being. And Tammy was able to show that I was a Christian. and that you could be gay and Christian, and that was unheard of in televangelist circles.
I feel like the gay community kept my mother alive for many years.
Tammy died of lung cancer in July 2007. On the day before her death, she made her final TV appearance on CNN's Larry King Live.
Tammy Faye, what, in your opinion, is the best way to deal with cancer?
With accept it and do whatever you can to help get rid of it. But most of all, trust the Lord.
I was appalled, you know, looking at her, and she just looked awful. And I knew she was getting a really severe eviction notice from her body. It was painful to watch because I knew exactly what she felt like being that close to death. I remembered her saying at the end of our interview, "We want you to beat this thing.
God bless you, and we want you to beat this disease."
I will.
Oh,
with
God,
Jesus' help.
God bless you, Stephen. Thank you very much.
And for all intents and purposes, I have. And she's not here anymore. She died. How ironic that is, that she is the one to have died first of the two of us.
With Steve, Tammy's viewers experienced something rare in a culture war. They got to hear the enemy talk in a calm, non-adversarial environment, which is the opposite of how culture wars are fought today in the heightened, suspicious world of social media. Next time, the terrible story of a 1980s culture war that burned so blindingly, innocent lives were destroyed for the most irrational reasons. Things Fell Apart was presented by me, John Ronson, and produced by Sarah Shebbia. The music was by Phil Channel. The programme was mixed by Bob Nettles. The editor was Philip Sellers. It's a BBC audio production for BBC Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Welcome to Descendants, the series which looks into our lives and our past and asks something pretty simple. How close are each of our lives to the legacy of Britain's role in slavery? And who does that mean our lives are linked to? Narrated by me, Yersa Daly Ward, we hear from those who have found themselves connected to each other through this history. Whoever you are, wherever you are in Britain, the chances are this touches your life somewhere, somehow.
Descendants from BBC Radio 4. Listen now on BBC Sounds.